Morning. Welcome to the Health Human Services Finance Conference Committee. It is Tuesday, May 3rd. We today are have some language amendments from both the House and the Senate. These are technical in nature that are intended to address issues in the language to make sure they conform with, I think, the numbers. Or we'll have some explanation from our staff on those amendments. And we're going to deal with those first. And concluding that, we have a presentation that, on an idea that we will a little document that supports that, and then we'll do that. So I guess initially what I'd like to do is take the Senate amendments first, and then we'll do the House amendments. And I think, and Council can correct me, I have two amendments, A-103 and the A-107. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. The A-103 and A-107, yeah.
Let's take a look at
the House doesn't have. I have A-67.
Well, that's because it's wrong. I'm not going to be the House amendment.
You don't have the notice.
You still need to get the copy of the amendments to the House.
I see the amendments.
10% of all the proceeds have to go into a special fund to pay up.
We don't all vote on the Senate's amendments.
That might be another amendment. See.
Maybe friends, should we work out a passing of the amendment for the future? Because we can avoid it. Senator, you want us to?
I hate these kind of amendments. Where it's deleted, I mean, it's your bill yesterday hated by.
Oh my God!
Just
well, we have this.
Okay, the department.
I think
it's like a.
Morning.
Hey there,
good.
I believe members have the amendments that from the Senate at this point, and so Senator Newman moves the A-103 amendment, and I'd like to call on Senate Counsel to review that amendment for us, please. Just want to make sure we can hear the comments.
Mr. Chair and members, the A-103 amendment, these are technical amendments that were suggested by the Department of Human Services for the most part. Would you like me to go through the lines?
Just to tell us a little bit more about what we're doing and if anybody has any questions.
Okay. On page one, lines 3 to 6, this just cleans up the Senate Section 8, which deals with the applications for veterans, and the department would like that question posed in a different way, and that this changes that language. It's merely technical. Lines 7 through 9, this adds an effective date for eliminating the coverage for legal non-citizens. It goes with the tracking that we have. Lines 10 to the end of the page, to page 2, line 14. The department pointed out that we eliminated coverage for prosthesis, and dentures are prosthesis, so we took that out of the dental services section, and that again follows our tracking. On page 2, line 15 to 21, these are changes suggested by the department in the pharmacy payment changes. This is section 17 in the Senate. Again, that's technical. Lines 22 to 31, this goes with also with page 3 at the end of the page, line 34. Continues through page 4 to line 19 on page 5, and this is moving language. The Senate requires the disabled to enroll in managed care, and then they're able to opt out. The department wanted that in a different area of law, so we've moved that. On page 2, the end of page 2, line 32 to the end of the page.
We can't get a house.
And line or page 3 down to line 33. This is a section that was needed to coincide with our changes to the Merck carve-out language, that we're no longer transferring a portion of that, so we changed that language to match that. And if we go to page 5, line 20 to 22, this is fixing up our defined contribution language. In the base contribution, we needed to say up to 133%. This is section 41 of the Senate.
8 o'clock.
That coincides with that we had. The language that we had that everybody under 133% is eligible for the defined contribution of families and children. So we changed the language to match that in the contribution amount language. Lines 23 to 24, this is Senate Section 42, and this just is a technical change to our single adult in Minnesota care. The language was left out. And 25 to the end of the page, to page 6, to line 7. Our legal non-citizens eliminating coverage for those, we also needed to do that in Minnesota care. This coincides with our tracking. And on page 6, lines 8 to 10, this is just cleanup language with that language of in Minnesota care and the defined contribution of helping veterans ensure that they have, they get services through the vet hospital. That's, again, just cleanup. And then the rest of the page is just cleaning up our waiver to ensure that we're asking them for a waiver with families and children. If that's not received, then we go, we get a waiver, or we're asking for a waiver for just the parents. And then again, that's just cleanup.
Thank you. And members, this does not change any of the substance of what the is in the Senate bill. This is merely language to try to make a few correcting statements to make sure it conforms to what the intent of the bill was and to line up with the spreadsheet. Are there any questions on the amendment? Senator Newman renews his motion, A103. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion is carried. The second Senate amendment is the A107, and I believe members have copy of that.
This is the permissive amendment.
Mr. Chair, that just cleans up language in the Department of Health section, the Senate language. We inadvertently made some changes from the shall to may, and we're changing it back. We continue to keep within the appropriations, and this is in the sections that deal with family planning grants and the health disparities grants. This ensures that the commissioner would be required to spend the appropriation as the legislature intended, and that we wouldn't give them the ability not to spend it with the May. So,
thank you. And again, members, this is not changing the substance of any of the language in the Senate bill. It's merely, I think, to correct any ambiguity that might have existed in the language as it was introduced. Any questions on that? Senator Nienau moves the A107. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Which is adopted. I understand there are some amendments from the House side. And
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Abel.
And I don't know which we should go with first. We did ours. I'd like to move the A67. And I'll let staff describe it. There's 67-1.
Mr. Chair?
And I think these are by section, right? There's a number of them.
Mr. Chung.
Yeah. By article, I mean.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
These are by article. I think we have several by article.
Yes.
So that will help people.
So we're looking at the A67-1 amendment?
Yes. That's right, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair and members, this is a House amendment to House Article 5, which is the health care article. And again, many of these changes are technical or clarifying changes that were suggested by the Department of Human Services. So starting with page 1, lines 3 to 4 exempt ambulance services from House Section 9, which allows health plan companies to limit payments to out-of-network providers to the in-network rate. Lines 5 to 8 deal with the low birth weight initiative for hospitals. It clarifies that hospitals participate as a condition of provider enrollment rather than contract, and it makes the focus of the project the local service area of the hospital rather than, you know, a one-mile radius of the hospital. Lines 9 to 12 deal with applications for health care programs. It's similar to the Senate change. It changes the wording to refer, or it changes the language so that it doesn't prescribe the exact wording of the question. And then the House also changes the wording to refer to serving in the U.S. military rather than being a veteran. Lines 13 to 14 would include ambulance services as covered services under emergency medical assistance in Health Section 23. Lines 15 to 16 deal with medication therapy management. The House expanded the definition of home setting to include skilled nursing facilities. This amendment would change that and exclude skilled nursing facilities in order to avoid service duplication, since some of this is already provided in nursing homes. Line 17 to page 2, line 19, this is new House language for the in-reach care coordination section. It replaces the language with language from the original bill plus a committee amendment, and this would make it easier for DHS to administer the proposal, and also changes the name of the service to in-reach service coordination. Then on lines 20 to 22, this adds a requirement for federal approval to an effective date section for care coordination payments to waiver recipients. Page 2, line 23, this clarifies that the requirement that health plans pay fee-for-service rates under the Payment Reform and Demonstration Project applies to enrollees from similar types of populations. Lines 24 to 26 deal with care coordination, the technical change to the effective date. Then line 27 to page 3, line 2, this is the House language on the managed care capitation payment withhold. This sets the withhold at the 70th percentile rather than a benchmark percentile, and it also limits provider payment reductions to the higher cost providers. Page 3, line 3, it's again a low birth rate initiative for the health plans. The plans would focus on areas within the local service areas of the hospitals under contract. Lines 5 to 14, this renames the global waiver the choice waiver. Line 15 is a technical correction to House Section 90. Then lines 16 to 19 add references to federal approval in an effective date section dealing with cost sharing. Page 3, lines 20 to 25, this would modify the income limit for the House Minnesota Care Defined Contribution Program to persons with incomes greater than 133% rather than persons with incomes greater than or equal to 133%. And this was suggested by the department to better conform with how they currently administer the income brackets under Minnesota Care. Lines 26 to 31 modify language related to the verification of employer-subsidized coverage. Line 32 deletes some incorrect language. Line 33 would require referrals of Minnesota Care applicants to veteran service officers for all veterans, not just those with incomes below a certain limit, again, to make it easier to administer. Line 34 to page 4, line 4, deals with Minnesota Care eligibility. It corrects a reference to income limits, corrects a cross-reference, and adds a reference to federal approval. Then page 4, lines 5 to 31, this replaces the existing House Section 115 on Medicaid fraud prevention. It's language from House File 1331, which was modified to eliminate the cost to Department of Human Services. Line 32 is a conforming change. Page 5, lines 1 to 3, again adds a reference to the choice waiver. And lines 4 to 5 delete duplicate repealers.
Thank you. And Representative Abler, can you just talk a little bit briefly about this change, the choice waiver? And I know we've got a presentation. Is that related to the presentation that we're going to be hearing a little bit later this morning?
Well, the biggest change here is just the change of name, Consumer Health Options and Innovative Care Excellence waiver. And so that's tracked all the way through there, Senator. And Mr. Chair. And I want to thank the different entities that are coming forward to look at our language and offer some improvements. The hospitals had some advice that we accepted. The MMA had some productive advice. Representative Benson.
Representative Abler, can you speak up a little
bit? Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Yeah, and Representative Benson, and Mac are working on the fraud piece, and they replaced that with a more workable plan that's in the bill there as well. So,
Mr. Chair, I did have a question about the changes to Medicaid
Senator
fraud.
Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did this in fact zero out the dollars to the department?
I think it creates.
Abler.
It did, and there's a savings actually that this gets.
Okay.
Senator Benson.
Mr. Chair, I just want to verify, because in order to access federal dollars for these funds, we have to have some small allocation, and before we can obviously change it back in some way, but before, I at least want to have the conversation so we don't lose that opportunity.
Do we want to talk about that? Yeah, the department could talk about that maybe on Friday.
Okay.
And so maybe they can be prepared to discuss that. I know that Representative Benson and Mac were working on this part, and I know we're all interested in that. So it was nice that it actually made some money. So I'm sure there's a cost and then some savings. But it's a net savings, and I don't know what the amount is.
Any other questions? Seeing none, Representative Abler renews his motion to adopt the 67-1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Representative Abler, have you got another amendment?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, there's a number of them. A-70 is on the top of my pile, so I'll move the A-70, and whichever staff has this can. Okay, Ms. Aves has this, I believe. So.
Mr. Chair and members, the A-70 amendment lines 3 through 7 complies with the DHS request for the non-prescriptive language for the veterans services. This is in the combined application form. It also includes the effective date they recommended. Lines 8 to 18 are DHS technical and effective date changes to the spousal contribution section. And line 19 deletes section 13, which is related to the clawback for the non-emergency medical transportation services.
Are there questions on the A-70 amendment?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler.
There's one thing about the military piece that I found interesting. There was a charge to change all the forms, but we're willing to yield to the department on the MFIP type things. But the healthcare forms, we wanted just the House position would be to expedite that questioning as soon as could be done practically. And so there's two different effective dates, and I don't remember what they were exactly, but the one was 2013, February 1st, for the whole work over all the forms. And Ms. A, do you remember what the date was for the health care? Was it August 1st?
Mr. Chair, it is August 1st, but just the health care.
And so we were charged some money, hopefully less money for that. It was like $25,000 to work all the forms over. But and just to relate that comment, the I think the Senate thinks alike on this, but the position of the House was that there's a whole array of very wonderful programs available to veterans, which are far beyond the scope of what the average PMAP can offer them in terms of looking at their totality of need. And so we There is a small savings to be had, perhaps, if we can move them away from the Minnesota subsidized programs, but just a wealth of good opportunities. They can get into the veteran system, which will help them with all their psychological issues and family matters and all that. So that's the intent of this.
Other questions on the A70 amendment? Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and Representative Abler, is it mandatory that they go into the veterans? Because there's a small segment of the vets that are of serious issues that really don't want to have anything to do with the VA.
Yeah. Representative Abler.
Mr. Representative Huntley, actually, we can't make them. We're gonna provide this as an opportunity, and hopefully they'll woo them in the the band of brothers and sisters will help each other.
So. Other questions on the A70 amendment? Seeing none, Representative Abler renews his motion to adopt the A70 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. Representative Abler.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A72 amendment, which I believe is also on this age.
Yeah. Mr. Chair and members, the A72 amendment is to Article 8, which is the Mental Health and Chemical Health Division article. The first section, which begins on line 1.3, requires prepaid plans to include continuing care benefit program in their capitation rate. It also adds language, more specific language, regarding transfer of unused funds from the CAB services or the children's mental health grants for the purpose of child and adolescent treatment under this section. Beginning on line 2.8 is a section requested by DHS for new language for the integrated dual diagnosis treatment. It changes existing paragraphs B and C about the certification of providers and instead inserts a requirement for rulemaking to establish the certification process. Again, both of these were requested by DHS as technical amendments.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler.
And I believe the dual diagnosis piece is related. The House limits inpatient chemical dependency treatment to 3 times in 4 years and 4 times in 10, unless there's some other, unless it's pre-authorized. And also there's some connection to if there's a discovery of dual diagnosis issues so it could work. The House's position was just not to squander this valuable treatment on people who aren't going to benefit by it or who are wrongly referred to it. The record I've heard is 19 times of treatment, which seems like the 17th one wasn't as productive as it might have been. And so that's the effort here. And so I believe that's how that's tied in there. So.
And Representative Abler, I'd like to have you talk a little bit about Subdivision 2 on page 2, 2.3 to 2.7. And I could be mistaken, but it seems that this language was in a bill that we had in our committee recently that I believe we amended out of the department bill out of concern for transferring funds on the authority of the commissioner that could have an effect on the baseline spending forecast going forward and the resulting lack of understanding of where funds are being used and whether or not there is a need for additional funds. And so there, I remember in committee we had language similar to this, and it might be the exact same language, but there were concerns in the Senate about that. And I'm a little concerned that we adopt this as a technical amendment.
And Mr. Chair?
Representative Abler.
And I don't think it's technical at all, but there was language in the bill that I think this was more clean than. But my question to staff as well when we brought it up is, if we didn't do this, would there be a savings that we at least would know we're spending? I don't know if the department is here to talk about that, Mr. Chair. And if not today, we can talk about it on Friday. Are they in the position? Okay. And maybe if we just should we hold this amendment out? This will make us have to talk about it. So, Mr. Chair, maybe I would move to divide the amendment just to adopt everything but lines 2.3 to 2.7.
So Representative Abler amends his amendment to remove subdivision 2, lines 2.3 to 2.7.
Well, Mr. Chair, actually, I'm just moving to only adopt the we'll leave that part in there, but we'll not act on this. This will be unfinished business for Friday.
All right. Representative Abler moves to divide his amendment by asking us to consider all but subdivision 2 in his motion. Are there other questions on the amendment? Seeing none, the A72 as not as amended, but as
divided.
all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The amendment is adopted.
And so they'll be prepared, I'm sure, for Friday. And okay. Mr. Chair, if I could move the S076069 amendment. Oh, it's six. Okay, this one. Okay, and that's Ms. Aves also.
So the S076069 amendment, you House amendments have got these complicated numbering schemes.
We like numbers. Yeah, we're math guys.
All right.
Mr. Chair and members.
You're cheering up the staff this morning, Mr. Chair.
This amendment is to Article 7 of the House language. Lines 1.3 to 1.25 is related to the White Earth project. And adds responsibility for providing human services to tribal members and their families who reside on and off reservation in Minoman County. It also adds a requirement to develop a similar plan to expand the program to Clearwater and Becker counties. The concern was expressed that in the existing language, the services are to be provided to tribal members. Some of their family members are not members of the tribe, so the request was made to include tribal members and their families.
Are there any questions on the S076069, Senator Newman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is there a definition of family? I mean, is it immediate family, extended family?
Representative Abler?
Mr. Chair, I'll defer to Ms. Aves.
Ms. Aves.
Mr. Chair and members, there was no definition given to me. I don't want to make any assumptions, so I think it would be best to ask the representatives from the tribes.
And
Representative Abler?
Should we, is anybody, can we talk about this? Anybody know that?
He's in the back, I think.
Is Mr. Haas here?
Yes, he's
in the back. Mr. Haas, do you want to come up and offer us some insight? The word Haas insight in the same sense.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I'm Bill Haas, and I represent White Earth. Could you restate the question that you had?
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Haas. My question is whether or not there is a definition of the language in the amendment that makes reference to tribal members' families. The amendment proposes to provide these benefits to tribal members and their families who reside on and off the reservation. And, you know, I'm just wondering whether or not what does their families mean? Is it immediate families? Is it children? Is it aunts and uncles? Is it extended families? Where do we stop with this provision?
Okay.
Mr. Haas.
Mr. Chair and Senator Newman, the family reference, in my understanding of this terminology, is some of the families are native, non-native, in mix, and so we are defining that family so that they can go to receive either services from White Earth or they could receive services from the county. They'd have a choice. But the goal is to keep that family unit together for services because right now they're split off in services, so one would get them from the tribe and one would get them from the county. So we want to give the family the choice so that all the services then would be provided by one entity.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Haas, I appreciate that, but the question is, what is the definition of family?
Mr. Haas.
Mr. Chair and Senator Newman, the family would be defined as the husband and wife and the children, and that would be it. It's not extended family. It's the immediate family.
And I don't know if council is prepared to give us any guidance here, but is that a definition that is in statute currently, or is this something that is assumed, or does it need to be more clearly spelled out? I know in some cases we refer to family and we list lots of relationships, and this does not do that, and I'm just wondering if there is anything that needs to be added to clarify that, or and I don't know, does Senate Counsel or House Counsel any comment on Ms. White?
Mr. Chair and members, I'm just doing a real quick search in this. This is inserted in Chapter 256, and I inserted the term family. It comes up several places. In those instances, it's not a definition. It's just within a sentence, and I'm not sure if House Counsel knows.
Mr. Chair and members, there are several definitions of family in statute. I don't know which one this would fit under or whether we would need to be more specific. I know for tribal, you know, settings, the definition of family is different than it is in statute sometimes. So if there is some concern, I think we need to more clearly define it in this language unless we can find a specific statutory cross-reference to use to define family.
Representative Abler, is that something that, in your view, would warrant some continued work before we adopt the amendment? Or
I'm happy to work on that. We surely want to include stepchildren and some of the blended families. And though the point of this whole section is to try to serve these, you know, families and serve the tribal members in a better way. And the more they can do it as a coherent process with whatever their family unit looks like, would be a desire. And is there one section we could pull out of this? I see Representative Gottwald has some.
Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering if, based on the definition that Mr. Hawes just described, whether or not we might want to look at a simple amendment, and I'll ask counsel to maybe weigh in on this, that where we mention and their families, we might want to change families to their immediate family members.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Abel.
Rather than do that here, I was thinking the same word. But I think what I'll do, Mr. Chair, is just to, again, offer to divide the amendment and exclude lines 18 and 19, which I think is the family part.
Well, Representative Abler, there's language on line 1.9, 1.22.
Let's hold the whole amendment. We'll work on it. And
Representative Abler withdraws the S076069.
Mr. Chair.
Good minds can work on this.
Yes, Mr. Haas.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, and I'll work with counsel and Representative Abler, and we'll get the definitions corrected and be back before the committee.
Right. Thank
Mr.
you.
Mr. Chair, just to the point of the withdrawn amendment, it's encouraging to hear how the progress is working with Minoman County and the department, and this is really moving forward well, and I'm excited about that opportunity. So we'll solve this family thing.
Representative Abler.
If I could move the A71 amendment.
Abler moves the A71 amendment. Representative Abler.
Oh, and this is Ms. Cleveland.
Mr. Chair and members, this amendment amends Article 2, which is the Health Department article, House language. Line 1.3 to 1.5 adds a section effective date for the limited food establishments. It specifies that this section will apply to applications for licensure submitted on or after the effective date. And lines 1.6 to 1.22 replaces a section regarding the food safety inspector's authority to grant waivers, and it replaces it with this language clarifying an existing option that people have for a variance request. And line 1.22 through 2.5 adds a requirement that the Commissioner of Health study causes of autism. And then page 2, line 6 through the end is replacing language on the nursing home regulatory efficiency section with language that I think was requested by long-term care imperative.
Do you have any questions?
Are there any questions from members on the A71 amendment?
I can just comment, Mr. Chair. The most of the first page through 122 has to do with my effort to create flexibility on small remodel projects that involve some kind of water, like a small coffee shop or someplace where the it's been a fascinating little study, but it's unclear who has flexibility. We're trying to make that flexibility clear. And I'm talking to Dolly even yet about what plumbing flexibility can be given on some of these small projects that, but for some flexibility, they wouldn't go forward. Without flexibility, they spend $15,000 to put in a floor drain. Everybody agrees it's a dumb idea. And these are not big restaurant projects, but just small 800-foot, you know, hole-in-the-wall deals. That's what that's about. And the autism information is probably self-explanatory, but we had some fascinating testimony. Which just reflects, and it's that's certain to cause some more discussion. And then the other page 2.7, I think that's a work in progress about trying to create some. Is that the part about the level A? Oh, that's something else. Okay, they're just that's a work group. Okay, that's it. Okay, I'm confusing my projects, Mr. Chair. I'm done.
All right. Are there questions from members? Questions? Representative Abler renews his motion to adopt the A71 amendment. All in favor say aye.
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 No.
Opposed?
No.
The amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chairman, I was not alert to that vote. I'm sorry.
Anyway, it adopted.
Okay. It's adopted.
All right.
Thank
okay.
Oh, thank you. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move to A73.
Representative Abler moves the A73 amendment.
Mr. Chair and members, this one amends Article 9, which is the appropriations. These are rider changes that are technical from the Department of Human Services. They're only the changes that they pointed out that are for language that is either same or identical or similar in the two positions. And so the first part inserts a paragraph that was left out of one of the riders related to MOE and TANF. And then that goes all the way to page 2, line 9. And then on line 2.10, that's correcting an error from last year. And then line 2.11 is adding Minnesota Care back into the transfer section for cash flow management.
Are there questions on the A73 amendment? Seeing none, Representative Abler renews his motion to adopt the A73 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Amendment is adopted. Representative Abler.
Mr. Chair, and I appreciate your patience. We try to do them by article so people could track these better. And it's the whole of these has to do with comments we've received from the hallways or the department or people that are now engaging and being helpful and moving us to a resolution by May 23rd. So I really appreciate all that. I'd like to move to A62. And I have an oral amendment.
Representative Abler moves the A62 amendment. And Representative Abler, what's your?
On line 2.4, if you would delete the and insert or, and I'd incorporate that into my amendment.
Representative Abler moves to amend his amendment on line 2.4, deleting the word and replacing with the word or, which will be incorporated into the overall amendment. Are there questions on the A62 amendment?
And actually, staff can go through it. That makes sense.
Mr. Chair, remember, this amendment is to Article 1, the Children and Family Services article of the House language. You'll see throughout there have been special effective dates added, and these were all things that were requested by the Department of Human Services. So I'll just go through some of the other changes that weren't technical requested by DHS. On page 1, lines 11 through 16, this is modifying general assistance eligibility. It's adding one of the categories back in and then fixing the paragraph numbering after that. On page 2, lines 2 through 4, this is adding an exemption to the GRH work requirements that are in the House bill for people that are in GRH settings that are under age 22 and meeting certain requirements. Page 2, line 7, this is modifying the GRH language that's related to having a sobriety policy. It's kind of softening that language. Page 2, line 16, this is modifying the work requirement for MFIT post-secondary education, changing it from 20 hours down to 10. Page 2, line 17, this is modifying the timeline for expedited food stamps, changing it, allowing counties 5 days instead of 2 days to process that. And the rest, as I said, is all technical effective date changes that were requested by DHS.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler.
Probably the most interesting on the project is line 2.7. This has to do with GRH houses that are wet houses, which I find problematic. And so we've been trying to get them to keep people on a path toward sobriety and greater success. And the word enforce actually would actually cause more harm than benefit. And so the word encourage actually will cause more sobriety, I was told. So I'm trying to work with the advocates on that. So.
Other questions on the A62 amendment? Seeing none, Representative Abler renews his motion to adopt the A62 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The amendment is adopted.
I had the last amendment, Mr. Chair.
Last amendment.
The A65.
Representative Abler moves the A65 amendment. Is someone going to talk a little bit about that?
Oh, Ms. Pinelli.
Maybe I have yours.
Mr. Chair and members, this amendment is to Article 6. This is the continuing care article. I don't think any of the changes contained in this article were related to changes that were requested by DHS. We actually haven't had a chance to go through those yet, so I'm assuming that we'll be coming later on with another amendment to Article 6 that will include the DHS technical requests. At any rate, this amendment on page 1, line 3 through page 3, line 15, is replacing the case management appeals language that's in the House bill right now. And this is just updated language that I think advocates have worked on with us. And then page 3, line 18, removes House Section 16, and this is a section that we were told by DHS violates federal law, so we're removing that. Page 3, lines 19 and 20, this makes an exception for Meals on Wheels in some language that we have related to case management. Page 3, lines 23 and 24, this modifies timelines for determining eligibility for nursing facility care, I believe. Page 3, line 26 through page 4, line 9, this is clarifying language related to assessments and discharge plans related to Mary T. Page 4, line 10, this is removing House Section 50. It was related to some other language that was in the House bill previously that's already been removed. This was just kind of overlooked when we removed the other language, so we need to remove this, too, to be consistent. And then page 4, lines 11 through 19, is adding a direction to the Ombudsman for Long-Term Care.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler.
And these are, I don't know if they're technical, but they're useful improvements to our effort to create a path for whoever we can put on a path. We talked about the sobriety path for people in group residential housing. You know, it's the same as people on MFIP with going to college. And the people in disability services on a path to the most independence possible. And that requires some effort on the part of the case managers and the advocates and the people themselves to you know, be encouraged along that way, and with the 2 a year, the every 6 month evaluations, while there's some chance of change, that's clarified in here, as you can see it in a few places. And in one other element, there's, I think, 323 to 324 has to do with the counties with their assessment of medical assistance eligibility. The nursing homes have a problem with that getting snagged up. And this says that it's going to be the earlier of, I believe it's, I haven't read the whole bill as this lays in there, but the intent is that it be the earlier of 10 days after all the information is submitted, or 45 days, which is federal law. Received, yeah, when they get all the information. So if they get it right away, they could make a determination within 2 weeks.
And Representative Abler, the comment from staff was that there may be some other amendments on this article from the department. Is that relating to this language?
Mr. Chair, I don't believe so, but I'm not sure, as we haven't had a chance to go through all of what we've received from DHS at this point related to Article 6.
And Mr. Chair, just on this topic, there will be more amendments coming. I have to sit down with staff and get a very clean track through here. But we're trying to incorporate the best of Lutheran Social Services, the best of Mary T., which has this discharge plan, and the best of moving people to more independence. And I think there's still some overlap. And the department is weighing in, and we're having discussions about that. The department is not, at this point, exceptionally enthusiastic about all this, but I think this is the direction we absolutely have to go in, especially as we face declining resources to serve more people. And so we're going to keep working with the department and having more dialogue over the next couple of weeks.
Any further questions on the A65 amendment? Yes, Representative Hoffman. Or, I'm sorry, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a question on Section 56. And it's calling for the long-term care, the omnibus, to develop a task force. I don't know about the House rules, but in the Senate rules, I was talking to Senator Fischbach about this the other day, and we can't actually put task force in conference, I believe, by our rules. I don't know what the House rules are.
That is a that's an interesting question. I don't know this.
You'd say working group or something.
I'm not. My understanding is that we can put into the conference bill things that are germane. I'm not sure what this. If Representative Abler, have you got any?
Mr. Chair, this came from the ombudsman, so I don't know if she's here this morning.
Well,
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you. And
Senator
while we're looking for the ombudsman, and I'm wondering, is this going to cost money, or is this just going to be picked up by the department? That's another. It seems like this is a money.
And Mr. Chair, they would work out of the ombudsman's current budget. This just directs them to do a task, and it could be a work project and not a task force. And so I don't think what it's called is so important, but the function is.
So there is not any financial consideration to this portion of the amendment?
And for the time being, if you want to call it a working group or a.
They do not get any additional.
No. Do you want to change the name? Or
Representative Abler, I will defer to the committee if they're uncomfortable with task force, and I'm not certain of the rule that.
And we can sleep on it until Friday. So maybe I'll just pull this out and we can. I would like to. There's just enough time to do our presentation if we don't get too hung up on this particular point. So maybe, Mr. Chair, at this point, I'll just pull that out of this amendment. I'll move to divide and at this point hold out 412 to 4, whatever, 19, I guess it is on this.
Representative Abler moves to divide the A65, and we will act on the amendment with the exception of lines 4.12 to 4.19.
Mr. Chair, in the 3 days we have intervening, could we have a task force work on the task force?
I'm sure we could.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Is 4.11 part of the?
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry. 4.11 to 4.19 would be the division. And we will consider the amendment with the exception of those lines on page 4. Any other questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Amendment is adopted. That is all the amendments I have, unless members have others that we are aware of. We do want to give some opportunity for a presentation on the Minnesota Choice provision. And Representative Abler, I'm going to ask you to introduce your...
Sure, Mr. Chair. Maybe if the who's ever going to talk about this, Mr. Skubick and Mr. Buck.
McAlpin.
Yeah, Mr. McAlpin. This is kind of the good news part of our process here. I'm very pleased to hear some of the private entities in our city and state taking some ideas we brought forward and actually fleshing them out and making them real. And I think that you'll hear in this, this is a draft presentation. This is merely to create some discussion. But I think that it's an excellent way to go. The themes that we've heard from everybody have to do with what are we getting for our money? Representative Huntley asked the question, what's their incentive to save money from every entity, which I told him I've repeated that now 25 times to people. It's like the question of the hour. How do we focus on the clients in the face of resources that are flat with increasing needs? And so we talk about flexibility in this choice waiver that we've talked about. And so what would that look like if we did it? And so that's the intention of the presenters. And, Mr. Chair, I understand you want to quit about 10-20 or so for the committee. So maybe they can go however many, 10-15 minutes, and then we'll have some questions or however, I don't know how long you have planned. But so with that, I'll let the presenters present, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee. And who would like to? Mr. Skubick.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you. My name is Mark Skubick. I'm the Vice President of Government Relations for Park Nicollet Health Services. As we start out the presentation, I'd like to set a framework for you to help you understand our acknowledgement that the current system is unsustainable in the long term and that we need to make some dramatic changes to how health care is provided and paid for, and that the cost of health care is becoming unaffordable for employers, for state government, and for consumers. So we're trying to propose for you some potential solutions to try to deal with that problem. As I walked out the house this morning, I thought of former Representative Roger Cooper, who some of you may recall, who used to be famous for the phrase that when the lilacs bloom, the deals get made. And as my allergy started to act up, I started to think, well, maybe we're close to having a deal here. So what I'd like to do is present to you a situation Park Nicollet's been looking at, and it's not too dissimilar than what other providers in the state of Minnesota are struggling with right now. And we refer to this challenge at Park Nicollet as the boiling frog syndrome. You'll recall the old analogy of frog sitting in a pot of water, and as the temperature gets turned up, the frog doesn't recognize that it's getting hotter and hotter and eventually boils to death. So what we've been looking at over the past several years is a continued cut in government program payments, both in Medicaid and Medicare. We're also looking at a challenge with the Medicare population. We know there's about 10,000 people per day now, beginning January 1st of this year, who are aging into the Medicare program. And we're also beginning to see a steady increase in our government program payer mix, which is making it more difficult to try to figure out how to offset the losses from those programs. At Park Nicollet for this year, we're projecting we'll lose $140 million on government programs. So we did a brief analysis and identified that if all of our payers were to pay us at Medicaid rates, and just to give you a little context, Park Nicollet has a total annual expenditure of about $1 billion a year. But if all of our payers paid us at Medicaid rates, we would lose $250 million. And on the converse, if all of our payers paid us at commercial rates, we would actually experience a positive margin of $250 million. Just think about the context of that $500 million swing for an organization like ours, which is essentially about half of our total expenditures. So some of you may have read in the Star Tribune this past weekend, our CEO about a year ago tasked our chief of primary care to try to design a conceptual clinic that would deliver at Medicare rates to try to understand whether or not we could make that work. So the concept team worked on redesigning how we would deliver care to our patients in our community. And it was really a team-based care approach. And you've heard a lot of testimony this year and last year, I think, on the value of team-based care, especially in the context of healthcare homes, which have been very successful. So in this team, in this concept clinic, we were looking at the potential of shifting the role of physicians and our mid-level practitioners. So physicians would only see the more complex patients, and our mid-level practitioners would see the remainder of the patients and work with them to keep them healthy and coordinate their care. So in the end, the finding, looking at designing that kind of a concept clinic, we still realized we would lose about 40% relative to what we would experience in the commercial market. And the reasons that the concept clinic was not feasible in our analysis were a number of reasons. First of all, it creates a new staffing structure. Because you're hiring more mid-level practitioners and you're still keeping physicians busy with the sicker patients. The mid-level practitioners actually receive a lower payment than what the physicians would. But more important and probably the biggest challenge we would have in making that work is the fee-for-service system is so broken, it doesn't allow you to be compensated for that transition and the redesign you do, so it's just unsustainable to do it that way unless we change how providers are paid. So the key that for all of this and what you're struggling with right now is the need to try to find a way to create some innovative options, and we're hopeful that this concept paper will help you with that. And really, it redefines the value proposition for all the stakeholders in healthcare, the consumers, providers, health plans, and patients, and the state. And we're hopeful that this will help move the discussion forward towards that kind of change. So in your documents, you have a presentation, Choice a Minnesota Solution. And it's really about trying to realign the system to allow for partnering between patients and providers. So really there's four stakeholder groups that we looked at to identify what behavior changes would be needed to move us forward to make healthcare more sustainable over time. And it focuses on the patient, the provider, the health plan, and the state. So I'd like to just quickly run through what the concepts might be in this, and I'm sure you'll have a lot of conversation on how to improve on this going forward, but we just wanted to lay out this framework. So for the patient, what we're suggesting is that the proactive patient would actually select a choice provider network and be enrolled in that network for 1 year. It's an important concept because for us to be able to provide the care we need to do for the patient involving the patient, their family, and the community, we need to have some kind of commitment to work towards their health care goals. And the patient would also agree then to receive all non-emergency care from that provider network, working with providers on individualized care plans. For the provider, the new value proposition would be that the provider is responsible for the comprehensive care of the choice patient population to focus on quality, the patient experience, and the efficiency of the delivery system in achieving those goals. A critical point here is that you primarily focus on the quality improvements because really what we've learned over the past 5 years in a number of demonstrations we've undertaken with some payers is that by changing the focus to primarily focus on how to improve care, you can actually create the efficiencies. The challenge we have is the payment system right now isn't lined up sufficiently to allow a provider to do well by doing the right thing for the patient. And for the health plan behavior changes, what we're suggesting here is that the savings achieved by the choice providers are returned to those providers, along with the percent share of any efficiencies created by the care system. The plan would share in those efficiencies with the providers, but more importantly, we need to have a robust database from the providers to help us identify what our hotspot opportunities are to work on the sickest patients in the population we serve. The document suggests that the health plan profits on government programs operate within a risk corridor. I think you've seen some discussions around that, and we think that is a good concept to be thinking about, and that there be an anticipated medical loss ratio at some percentage level to be determined. One of the other things we would ask of the health plans is to work with us to alert us when patients that are have selected our networks, to alert us when they're seeking care outside of the system so we can work with those patients to try to coordinate their care more efficiently. And then finally, for the state, there's a number of ways you could do this, but the concept of creating a more streamlined, a simpler global budget global waiver concept would be to look at bringing all of the programs, the CCDS funding, from which Buck, Mr. McAlpin will speak a little bit about what their experience has been there, but try to consolidate and streamline the program so it's not quite as complex and that the goals can be applied equitably to all of those populations. And then finally, to ensure that there's suitable reimbursement for providers within that system, which has been one of the challenges we've struggled over the years. And there's a number of features within that, like what the risk adjustment methodology might be, so that we can ensure that it doesn't penalize providers who serve sicker patients. So the concept is the choice waiver. The state would seek from CMS the following concepts: that the program be allowed to be simplified administratively so that we can find savings in the administrative simplification, that there be a single waiver and a global payment to the state that would be adjusted for medical inflation and caseload growth with some predictability for the state to provide health care coverage to the public program recipients. Also, we're suggesting the concept that there be a federally insured protection against catastrophic and uncontrollable costs. And finally, provide for operational flexibility that supports the efficiencies that would be created through the waiver process. One of the things we as providers have been most frustrated with is that even though we are able to create more innovative delivery processes, the payment system just hasn't been there to support that. And we actually looked in some of the other pilots and demos we've worked on that if we were to totally change our system to provide care with new innovative ways, we'd probably go bankrupt because the current fee-for-service system simply doesn't pay for a lot of the services within it.
Mark. Mr. Chair and members, Buck McAlpin, Director of Government Affairs for North Memorial, and thanks for the opportunity this morning to run through this. We kind of put a concept together a few weeks ago, did a little more details about it over the weekend, but we understand your challenge to try to put something this monumental together, and we felt with some of the request for proposal stuff that's going to be coming from DHS, some direct contracting ideas, what are some other ideas that we can bring forward as an individual hospital like ours, or Mr. Skubik's, or from the Hospital Association, that puts a little teeth around how we actually do reform for sustainability. Our CEO, our financial guys, and our CMO has been down and met with many of you and Chairman Abler, and it's pretty clear their message. When we did do the coordinated care delivery system, we wrote off about $9 million of lost costs with it, so absolutely well underfunded. But the concept, we feel, I know both bills do have the CCD language. We feel this is a better direction to go in that's sustainable than the coordinated care delivery system. And we hope we can continue dialogue with you with that. But just probably an interesting quote. I think we've heard a lot about the health plans in the paper recently, the last few months, and we feel that they're a very important part in this role. They do an unbelievable job with helping manage some of the population. We use Preferred One, and I know Fairview did as we operated our coordinated care delivery system, and it was key to making it work for us of how we track the population. And we know if this proposal or ideas move forward, they're going to be part of this discussion with us. But one thing, a quick quote from the Pioneer Press I was just reading, the rate of health care cost increase in Minnesota was lower last year than elsewhere in the country, said Mike Lentz, Vice President of Network Management at Medica. That's due in part to total cost of care contracts between health insurers in the state in hospitals and doctors, Lentz said. The contracts give health care providers financial incentives to manage patients' care so services aren't overused, Lentz said. We believe that's starting to have an impact on the overall trend. I think the important thing is we see our budget problem today. I couldn't imagine the folks in this room that haven't been doing care planning the last few years with the health plans or with individual providers didn't do some of the things we've did where we'd be financially today in this budget. So I think anything we continue to move forward around payment reform is only going to give us sustainable long-term savings. So once we get out of this budget cycle, we're not sitting here again in a couple years wondering how we sustain the system. But just a few more things. This page 4, I won't read through it. I think you can understand it. There's just a few highlights I'll point out so we could leave times for questions, Mr. Chair. How does Minnesota Choice help in achieving 12 and 13 saving? It reduces some of the timelines to implement the initiatives we are seeking. One waiver, not multiple waivers. I think Minnesota has a gaggle of waivers. Some of the children stuff, adult stuff, I think we all have different opinions over what should be in something like that. We need to work the Department of Human Services and this committee. Streamline of administrative procedures reduces some federal reporting. It allows incentives and personal responsibility. I think, and I'm probably one to blame, I sat in the health committees last year and said, Mr. Chair, we absolutely can't care coordinate the GAMC population. I think the history shown between the four of us that did it, besides always one or two or five people, that we actually did care coordinate that population, and we have the data to show the cost curve dropped quite a bit, and we were able to keep people out of emergency rooms. And I think once we gave them the tie-in with a clinic setting and a primary care doc, most importantly, these were social worker-type patients or case coordinators, we could drastically change the impact of the cost to the system. Allows for some flexibility to address cost drivers. It permits the state to use savings that result from managing the program within negotiated trend factors. Page 6, I'll just jump to. Challenge and purpose, obtain CMS approval, recognize savings. We feel this will address unsustainable growth in state expenditures for Medicaid, things Mr. Skubic talked about. Assure federal funding at levels that enable Minnesota to preserve the gains made. Over the past 10 years, many of you at this table have been very involved with health care reform. We hate to see some of that stop. Obtain greater flexibility in state's management of overall Medicaid program. Implement less expensive options and greater choices for our citizens. Promote greater quality and transparency of cost. Mark talked about that too. Obviously, the big part of this is we need to know where people are going. If they're leaving the North system to go to Duluth, well, maybe if they move to Duluth, we should know about that, and we can have them reassigned to an Essentia clinic or a Health Partners clinic or somebody up in Duluth to be sure they stay care coordinated for. Identify costs not otherwise matched. I know there's controversy around federal dollars, but perhaps extend a coordinated care match to incent providers from small independent clinics to systems the size of Alina to care coordinate populations. Probably the last big thing on the last page here, why care about the choice? And we've just used the choice name when Chairman Abler brought that forward, whatever you wanted to talk about the program. Those interested in CCD reinstatement because of its potential to provide predictability, savings, or care, coordination should see this as a superior and much more desirable and more important sustainable model. As we look at trying to predict what our costs will be to care for this population, when we start to do some block granting to facilities like we did with the CCD, we want statewide buy-in with a program like this. Maybe it starts in the 7-county, 11-county metro area. We feel positive that if this was something that we could implement statewide, that's how we do some pretty interesting things around caring for a population. The rest of it I think you can read. And the last page, I think, is just a redundant copied page, page 8. So, Mr. Chair, with that, we appreciate the 15, 20 minutes and would love to answer any questions if anybody has any.
Representative Godwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks to our testifiers. I appreciate the work that's being done on this, and I hope people come away from this with the understanding and impression that a great deal of thought and detail and work is going into thinking about how we cut the strings and the bonds of federal rules and regulations that are getting in the way of Minnesota doing what it does best, and that's manage and coordinate and deliver high-quality outcomes for the lowest costs in the country. That's the force we want to bring to bear on the skyrocketing Medicaid and Medicare costs in the state of Minnesota. And I know a great deal of politics, Mr. Chair, is being played around with the concept of a global waiver, but this is what it's about and what's in it for us, and I think we should really be trying to work together in every way to make this happen, working with our congressional delegation, with the governor's office, with the DFL, with the GOP, obviously, and with care providers throughout the state of Minnesota to make this happen. This is in the best interests of Minnesotans. And so I want to thank you and everybody who's been working so hard on this. I know Representative Abler has been kind of championing this. But I do hope we get to a point where we set aside the partisanship and start looking at the real opportunity here for Minnesota and work on this. I think this is something we can't delay either. I think it's something we need to get done this session. We need to get on the road to doing this as soon as possible. So, again, thanks for the presentation and the exposure and the detail.
Thank you. Representative Huntley.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, I don't have a question for the two testifiers, but thank you for your testimony. It seems to me this is one of the key issues that we're going to have to deal with, and at some time we're going to have the commissioner come in and tell us what she thinks. The Senate has assumed this, if I remember right, saves about $600 million, and the House put down $300 million. And obviously, we can't really start to make decisions on this bill until we know if those, which of those numbers is correct, or if either one is correct. Well, otherwise, it's too big a chunk of the budget. And if we start making decisions on other parts of the budget and leave this stuff up in the air, it seems to me we're just wasting our time. So we're going to have to. Seems to me have the commissioner come in. Have the financial forecasters come in and evaluate what this would save. And I think it would save, but I certainly don't have any idea what the number would be.
Well, and just I appreciate your comment, Representative Huntley. The Senate bill has $600 million, but that is associated with a expanded defined contribution structure, which is a little different, I think, than the global waiver that's in the House language. Bills have the CCDS structure in place, funded about the same. But I do think that among those three ideas, there is a need to perhaps bring them together into a structure that is going to provide the kind of assistance that we need for all of our lower-income folks that are in the public programs. And I did have a question for Mr. McAlpin or Mr. Skubic, and just curiosity, any conversations with the plans as you develop this idea, and I don't want to put you on the spot and ask you to speak for them, but just as you've thought about this and talked about it, have you gotten any input from the plans?
Mr. Chairman, we've shared this, I believe, with the plans. One of the things this builds upon is some of the work we've done with the plans. For example, in 2008, Minnesota passed the healthcare home legislation to try to find savings and efficiencies. Just as an example, we've worked with Medica to develop a healthcare home pilot, and we essentially put, I believe, three of our clinics into that pilot. And our first year's performance, we learned that there was about a 17% savings reduction in cost from that pilot program. We're still looking at the numbers to understand it a little bit better and how it was all accomplished, but we think there's a lot of opportunity there. So I think the answer is yes, we can work with the plans. I think this proposal creates an option for alternative ways of achieving that as well, have the state work with the plan. But, you know, I think what you're seeing in this proposal is building upon what we started to work on in the private market.
Thank you, and I appreciate the bringing this forward, and I think you're right. This will become a part of the conversation that we have going forward. Representative Abler.
Mr. Chair, and I know we're kind of running low on time, but just a comment, and then I'll announce the plan for the week. I really appreciate this idea coming forward like this, and what I appreciate in particular is the focus on the client. And I think as we move into as we reiterate our next evolution in Minnesota healthcare, that's where I think that focus is outstanding, and I think the testifiers exemplified that. And it builds on Minnesota's excellence. It builds on Minnesota's bipartisan health reform that we continue and actually add, more pout rocket boosters to. And it builds on our ability to be flexible and our focus on the people that we care so much about. Minnesota has, in lean times and rich times, focused on the people that we care about. And we've always been at the head of the pack and certainly the top five so many indicators. And I appreciate the practical piece, because this thing actually has to work. And Representative Huntley, I couldn't agree more. We actually have to find real money, and I'm happy to see it moving toward, major, billion-dollar entities coming forward saying, we'd like to take a stab at this. And Minnesota's multi-billion-dollar health, industry. And so the question of what population, under 75%, under 133, under 250, we don't know that. But I see this as just a really good start on the next 2 weeks of discussion we'll be having in this at this venue. And I welcome the comments from the people in the hallway as they represent their various groups and the department and the plans, et cetera. So I'm quite excited about that, Mr. Chair.
Are there any other questions for our witnesses before we do have to conclude here? The Senate has a committee that we have to provide for here. Seeing none,
Mr. Chair, so I'll just comment on that.
Representative Abler.
And just to give people heads up on the week, the next meeting will be Friday at 8 o'clock in room something. To be determined. We're trying to find a house room because it's just more convenient than this with all the posts and everything. But that'll be 8 o'clock on Friday. We'll do an hour and a half or so. We're going to be adopting some language. Same and similar is probably. We'll see how far we can get on some of that. And I don't think we plan to meet publicly over the weekend, so you can have your Mother's Day. We do plan, actually, we are on a track to get an agreement by May 23rd. So that's a lot of things have to fall into place for that to happen. I remain optimistic, and Chair Hand remains optimistic, and appreciate the department's help in moving us toward that path. So that's the plan, and that's all I have, Mr. Chair.
Right. Thank you, Representative Abler. Yes, we do have I guess we'll give more details, but we're planning to meet on Friday to deal with the same and similar language, see how far we get with that. Next week, Chairman Abler and I have talked. We think that we're going to be getting into more of the substance of some of the differences between the two bills and try to bring some reconciliation, some of those things. So we will be doing a little more heavy lifting next week. I don't believe that we have conflicts in the Senate so much with our policy committees as we have this week. So I expect that we'll have more time for committee work next week. And so I expect a lot of work from members just to be on the alert for that.
Just one thing else.
Representative Abler.
Well, and for those who are interested in these various topics of the bill, I think you can judge that the House and Senate are both committed to moving forward with available funds. We're committed towards serving the people in new ways. And 2 weeks is a long time here. And so if you want to be part of the process and have ideas about how to improve our language and on either side, whether it be Senate language or House, this is a good week to do that. So,
thank you. Any other comments from committee members? With that, then, we are adjourned. Thank you.